Final hour of the show, then it is the Gas House Gang at 12 o'clock. Amy Marks Corps' Chris Ranji on 104.1 FM KMOX. Congrats to Beth from O'Fallon. I don't know which O'Fallon, but it's an O'Fallon, either Illinois or Missouri.
O'Fallon or Mo Fallon, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't really have any idea. But congratulations, Beth. You won a four-pack of tickets to see Soul on Fire October 2nd. Don't worry, we have one more four-pack to give away. But right now, we go to the guest line and we speak with independent news creator on Substack, YouTube, and Newsphere, and contributor to News Nation, Chris Saliza, a political commentator who also has a very good daily newsletter called So What? Chris is with us now on KMOX. Good to talk to you, Chris.
Hello, friends. Welcome back, Amy.
Thank you very much.
She made it. She did not fall off a cliff, was not eaten by a bear.
Yep. Chris said you weren't coming back in our private conversations, but I probably shouldn't air that dirty laundry.
Well, she was, we almost did not let her back in the city.
Yeah, no, that's right. Come on, Chris, people love dirty laundry.
That is true. Dirty laundry is the best kind.
It's the best kind of laundry, baby.
Chris, so yesterday, while all the football action was happening, people focused on the NFL, there was a football stadium that held a memorial service for Charlie Kirk. It's where the Arizona Cardinals play in Glendale, Arizona. And it looked like a lot of people were there. And I'm sure that you heard, you know, some of the service and multiple people spoke. The president spoke. Erica Kirk, his widow, spoke. Stephen Miller. There were a lot of people there. What were your thoughts on the service?
I mean, a massive number of people. I think the estimates are 90,000, which in the stadium, you know, 70-ish and then another 20 elsewhere. Look, it was sort of a spectacle. I mean, I think we expected this. This was sort of a week-long build-up to it. Basically, as you noted, Chris, every sort of anyone who's anyone in the Trump administration was there, president, vice president, you know, Tulsi Gabbard spoke. I mean, I had two quick takeaways. One, I thought Erica Kirk, Charlie Kirk's widow, was really, really good in a extremely difficult time. And I wrote this down on a post-it note on my desk. The answer to hate is not hate. That was Erica Kirk. And, you know, and that was part of where she was talking about forgiving the man who shot her husband and killed him. That's takeaway one. Takeaway two is that, you know, Donald Trump is never going to not be Donald Trump. So he gets up there and it's very clear, this is true if you've ever watched Trump for any extended period of time, you can tell when he's giving a speech, when he's reading off of the prompter, and when he's not. And you could very much tell it in that speech. And, you know, the line that gets quoted is, you know, Charlie wanted us to love our enemies. I don't, you know, I think they're bad people. I'm paraphrasing, but that gets at it. He's not interested in being a uniter. It's just not who he is. And that makes him different than most past presidents who at least paid lip service to the idea that in moments like this where the country is sort of paying attention, that the job of the president is to remind us of our common humanity. That's not really ever been Donald Trump's thing. And, you know, it wasn't his thing in the speech. I went through his speech line by line. I mean, a lot of it is sort of his campaign speech with, and Charlie supported that too. You know, a lot of that. And, you know, he's not, it's just not who he is. It's not who he's ever going to be. So I wasn't surprised by it. But I think it's worth noting.
Yeah, the earlier, a couple of days ago, Van Jones of CNN revealed that Charlie Kirk had direct messaged him, I believe it was the day before he was murdered, and Van Jones was very touched and pretty emotional, actually, as he relayed the direct message, because as he said on CNN, they were beefing. They were arguing on Twitter. But he saw the direct message. This is the direct message from Charlie Kirk. Hey, Van, I mean it. I'd love to have you on my show to have a respectful conversation about crime and race. I would be a gentleman, as I know you would be as well. We can disagree about the issues agreeably. And I think that was one thing that Charlie, the thing that Charlie Kirk did better than anyone else is he engaged in conversation.
Yeah, it made me sad in a lot of ways to hear that, because honestly, like, Van Jones and Charlie Kirk are two of the most interesting voices obviously on opposite ends of the political spectrum. I worked with Van at CNN. I think he is a tremendously authentic, genuine guy who believes what he believes, but is open to hearing other points of view in a civil way. I never worked with Charlie Kirk, but that's obviously his reputation. I would have loved to see a Charlie Kirk Van Jones podcast. I would listen to that. But yeah, you know, Amy, I think that's the hard thing is sort of the lesson of Charlie Kirk to me is you can disagree without being disagreeable. You can hear other people's views, even if you find them to be really unappealing. And it doesn't mean you change your mind, but you can recognize that other people arrive at different conclusions and they're not terrible people. The problem that I have is some of the stuff that's been coming out is, you know, they killed Charlie Kirk. It's not clear to me who they is, but they killed Charlie Kirk and now they silenced our voice and now is the time where we have to wreak our revenge. I mean, that kind of stuff, or we hate our political opponents. So that's the kind of stuff he would not support in any way, shape, or form. So in some ways, I think people are twisting kind of who he was and what his legacy should be to their own means. That's obviously something that people do all the time when someone prominent is killed, particularly at such a young age and in such a public way. But I think that's unfortunate because Charlie Kirk was a leading proponent of talking to people with whom you disagree.
Yeah. More. I mean, he had more conversations than anyone else. That was his whole tour, was change my mind. It was persuasion and debate, and he did that in a very engaging way.
So, Chris, the one thing that about the last couple of weeks since this thing happened, since the tragedy occurred, and that is, I said it the day of and the days after, that I really hope we get to this moment here where everybody just says, okay, enough, stop. Both sides don't care. Instead of doing this never-ending cycle of something happens, we blame the other side.
Whose fault is it?
Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. We could do this in, you know, forever. Or we could just all say stop. And you identified something, you know, the use of they. You know, they did this when the assassination attempt of Donald Trump happened. It was they tried to kill him. They tried to silence him. Elon Musk keeps perpetuating that himself. They. There's no real they here, though. But when you do that, it really creates, to me, Chris, it creates a more adversarial environment, and it's making it worse. I mean, is there a way to come back from that?
I think there's always a way to come back. I really do. I guess I'm an optimist enough to think, you know, the idea that everything is lost is wrong. I think we're in a dark political place? I do. Do I think the incentive structure in politics to kind of highlight our disagreements rather than all of the things we agree on is broken? I do. I think there are ways back. I point out Utah Governor Spencer Cox, a conservative Republican in a Republican state who I think, you know, in the last 12 days has struck exactly the right tone.
Yep.
About sort of what this should mean. Again, political violence, if we spend all of our time debating which party is more to blame for political violence, number one, I think it kind of misses the point. Most of the people who commit political violence are not strictly fitting in a box of partisanship, right? That's number one. Number two, I think it misses the point more broadly, which is political violence is sort of a stain on all of us, right? I mean, if we can't speak our minds, even when that speaking of your mind is something that lots of people disagree with. Look, Charlie Kirk said a lot of inflammatory things. I mean, let's not make him, you know, he was not a voice for moderation in terms of his views, but he has every right to say those things.
Yep.
Because he is protected by the First Amendment. Again, I always remind people this. Free speech is not designed to protect speech with which you agree. It is expressly designed to protect speech with which you disagree. And I think if we get to a place where we lose sight of that, it's going to take you know, real leadership, and I think trying to focus on what unites us rather than what divides us. And candidly, and I don't mean this as a partisan statement at all, that's not Donald Trump's MO. He's never been that person. I don't know that he's ever going to be that person. And so, you know, I don't know that we can look to the presidency to change that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole, the past week and a half has been very, very heavy for the country. And I think it does highlight two monumental issues that are dividing our country. And one would be the fact that we live in a post-truth society in the sense that anything can be posted on the internet. You have AI. I mean, every time anything is posted on Twitter, you have people asking, Grok, is this real? And then Grok will say it's real, but it's not actually real. And yes, you could say Charlie Kirk said some things that the tone of it may be problematic. But I also watched a lot in the past week and a half of Charlie Kirk's videos, and I can also say a lot was taken out of context. Like, clips were taken.
Of course,
and
a 30-second short of a long conversation is not going to get you the context you need.
Right. So then if you have a couple instances of his statements being taken out of context when he was doing the very thing that we need, is having an honest conversation, that turns people off even more. And I think when you look especially at the memorial service, the funeral, what we're really seeing is there is a pretty big cultural divide where Ranj mentioned they, and I do think we're getting so divided culturally that those social threads that held our fabric together are pulling at the seams, and because we're being pulled and strained so far apart, the other side feels like a they.
I'll give you an example, Amy. I think of this all the time. I think in my lived life, and I'm guessing it's probably the same for you and Chris, in my lived life, I see tremendous human decency almost every day. Yesterday, I'm driving home from my son's soccer game. There's a guy on a motorcycle. He is stopped at a light. He drops the cap of his water bottle. A guy next to him in the next lane in a Prius gets out of the car at the stoplight, grabs it, hands it to him, they talk for a second, they both go on their merry way. Like, people are decent humans. Even if the guy in the motorcycle who had, like, long hair and a bunch of tattoos and the guy in the Prius might not have the same political views, I'm guessing, people are fundamentally decent. We don't hate each other by default. The problem is the political system we have, and I will say increasingly the media environment we have with the growth of partisan media, the media environment incentivizes focusing on the things that divide us. And you can really live in a bubble or a silo where you are only reading about how terrible they, to use your guys' words, are. The truth is, it's just we. It's all of us. Everybody has views. Just because someone disagrees with you politically doesn't make them a bad person, doesn't make them an idiot, doesn't make them evil, doesn't mean they hate America. But that works politically. That works from a partisan journalism standpoint to get you more subscribers, more viewers, etc. And that's why we have more of it. And until we decide to do something different, it's going to get worse.
Well, I'm not sure that you could do anything about, you know, you talked about the incentive structure, and the incentive is money. It is lucrative to do that.
Money and attention. So those things go together.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how that's ever going to change if the incentive is too high to not change. So, great stuff.
I don't disagree.
Chris Saliza, we appreciate you as always. Thank you for visiting with us.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
That is Chris Saliza, political commentator. His daily newsletter is called So What? You can read it. You should subscribe to it. Also, you'll see him on Substack, YouTube, Newsphere, and a contributor to News Nation. I'll tell you one big winner from the weekend.
Oh, this guy.
This guy right here.
Oh, buddy.
I won big this weekend. Let me tell you about that when we come back on KMOX. Big day for Ranj yesterday.
I'm happy for you.
Not only did the boys, the beloved bared down.
Do they call, is that what you called in Chicago, the beloved bears?
The beloved.
I don't it's think
our,
you.
Our beloved, yes. Yes. The Bears and
gosh,
the Chiefs.
I've never heard the song. Because
we always have
the
to
toot.
We always had to do the toot because they stunk for so long.
I didn't know there was the rest of a song.
Well, the Bears.
Wow.
The Bears.
I was waiting for the.
No, nope, not today.
Wow.
The Bears and the Chiefs. Bears and the Chiefs have the exact same record, which means they are exactly as good as the other.
It does. That's what that means.
So. Our no prize pick'em challenge You missed out, Amy, because we had two Battlehawks players in studio participating in the challenge, Cam Kelly and Jake Sutherland, two guys that we have actually spoken to on the phone before. We've had them on our show.
Well, let me ask.
Great guys. What? Really great guys.
That's what I was going to ask, because we all know the Battlehawks might be the nicest guys.
They're the best.
Ever. They're the best. They're funny. They're engaging. So meeting them in person, they say never meet your heroes.
Except for the Battlehawks.
Yeah, you can meet them.
Yeah,
that's
they're
awesome.
Great. Every single Battlehawk player
that's
or
awesome.
Person associated with them has been great. And so Cam Kelly and Jake Sutherland came in, defensive back and tight end. So they participated, and they selected games together. And then we had listener Chuck and John Hancock in your stead. He picked for you, and I don't think John did very well.
So... You know, my favorite person in the whole world is John Hancock. I love John Hancock. He is such a good person. He's awesome. He's funny. He's entertaining. He's smart. I don't think that he is great at picking football games.
Yeah, I don't think his heart's in it.
I don't think it is.
No.
I don't think it. That's what it is. It's not that he can't. It's that he doesn't necessarily care to.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
He didn't. Well, what he didn't care about is this. The fact that it was only affecting you.
Well.
Because he picked for you, so you have to accept all of his bad picks.
Did he pick a lot of teams, obviously, that you did not pick? Because, you know, I think maybe he took one for the team. I think he was trying to, as they say in showbiz, mix it up.
Well, let me tell you what really happened here is the Cleveland Browns came through for me. And the Bears, both. Because the Browns beat the stupid Packers, which... The Packers should not be as good as they are. It's a travesty that they are. And Cleveland won that game. I was the only one who picked against the Green Bay Packers.
Wow.
I did pick the Bears. And believe it or not, Cam and Jake, they picked them. John Hancock picked them. Listener Chuck did not. We all picked the Chiefs, except for Hancock, who picked the Giants.
Wow.
John Hancock thought the New York football Giants were going to beat the Chiefs.
Well, it sounds intimidating.
It's like he doesn't know who the Giants even are.
Well, if you only think of the mascot.
They're horrible.
And you think, oh, the Chiefs. Okay, that's cool. But they're facing Giants?
Just,
right? You would think the Giants would win.
Yeah, well, yes. But they're not that giant.
How do you feel about the Bears winning but having to rely on someone from Mizzou in order to get the Bears a win?
Oh, great. Luther Burden, in case you are just tuning in. Luther Burden, receiver for the Chicago Bears.
So the Bears, the Chicago Bears, had to import a Missourian for victory. That's how I see it.
What, a guy who went to...
Well, yeah, Missouri. You're always talking about, oh, Illinois is better than Missouri. Well, you had to bring in someone from Missouri in order to give the little Chicago, Illinois Bears a win. Luther Burden was a...
Let's just calm down on that, because really the man of the hour was a guy from Washington, D.C. It's Caleb Williams. Yeah. So Luther did have a great game, 101 yards receiving, and he caught a touchdown, 65-yard touchdown pass. I mean, he ran for a first down, or he caught a ball for a first down. Mm-hmm. He had a really nice game. It was a nice breakout game for Luther Burden, former Tiger, and great way to go for him, man. It was really, really cool to see Luther have a big day yesterday.
So how did I fare via my proxy and John Hancock? Did I come in last?
Did she come in last?
Yep.
Let's see.
Yes.
Oh, I did.
You picked
three correct teams via John Hancock.
Yeah. So you got the Bears right.
Yep.
You got the Rams right. And the Commanders, right?
My proxy picker.
Yep.
Okay.
So you just, I mean, and he's the one who picked the Giants. would never have picked the Giants.
Well, because, you know what? I think he was shaken by 0-2, and he thought, well, that's it. They're going to go 0-3.
Brutal.
That's what I think he was shaken up by the 0-2 starts to 0-2 start. I agree. I was shaken.
They're going to be.
I was rattled.
Here's the thing about the Chiefs. I've seen this movie a million times. I know how this is going to go. They are going to be in the playoffs. They start 0-2, and you're all freaking out, like, oh my God, they're no good anymore. They're fine. They have one of the best quarterbacks in history.
So
as long as you have that guy, you're going to the playoffs. They are going to be in the playoffs at the end of the year. So quit crying about it.
When are you going to know that the Bears are not in the playoffs? Now?
2 weeks ago. Just because they won yesterday doesn't mean they're going to go to the playoffs.
It feels like a playoff game.
It
Every
did.
Game is a playoff game
it
for
did.
The Bears.
Yeah, man. So, I look.
Well, I'm happy for you. When are you going to get up to Soldier Field?
I don't know. I'll let you know. Robert's watching us on YouTube, says we can't have Ronj too happy today. The show feeds off his anguish. So I am so sorry.
That's actually a very astute observation.
It is. It is. Colonel Ripper, the Bears looked like a real football Aww. Team yesterday. Yes, they did.
That's cute. That's cute.
Can't believe it. Now.
I'm worried about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift.
They're fine.
I think if they hadn't won yesterday, everything might have been called off.
Amy Marks Kors is back. I'm Chris Ronji. The Gas House Gang will continue some sports discussion at 12. Tom Ackerman and me will talk about Nolan Arenado basically coming to terms with not being a St. Louis Cardinal probably at the end of this season. So we'll talk about that and more. Big weekend from Mizzou. The Fighting Illini. Oof. Oh, and I'm sure Ackerman can't wait to talk about his Hoosiers. That's all coming up at 12 on KMOX.
Chris Ronji, Amy Marks Gores with you on a Monday morning. And Ronj, I know we've talked about health issues and health issues that are facing, you know, moms and dads and parents and kids and the community. Well, we talk about heart disease and heart attacks. A lot of times, I think people go to men. You think of like, oh, she lost her husband to a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
You think of men. But heart disease affects women. In fact, it's the number one killer of women in America. Yet, a lot of women don't know the warning signs of heart disease until it's too late. So joining us now is Linda Marino. She's a heart disease survivor helping to bring awareness to women's heart disease. And Linda, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I have to say, I was actually pretty surprised when I saw that number, that statistic, that heart disease is the number one killer of America, because I think a lot of us do kind of associate heart disease and heart attacks with men.
Absolutely. It is the number one killer. It's more than all forms of cancer combined, which is really shocking and important for everyone to realize.
Why do you think it goes like this? I mean, I think I have an answer for it, but I'm wondering why we sort of overlook something like this.
I mean, I have to laugh because it goes along with so many of us as women. Let's face it, we're wives, we're, you know, professionals in our careers, we're moms, we're friends, we're sisters, we're all of those things. And we just carry so many burdens. And a lot of times we don't put our own health first. And I hate to say it, but I think it's because we are so busy and we prioritize other things in our lives.
So over 60 million women, which is 44% of women in the United States, are living with some form of heart disease. What are some of the signs and symptoms to recognize if you might have heart disease?
I mean, to put it simply, I think there's really two, you know, the heart has two major functions. There's the electrical function of the heart and there's the plumbing function of the heart. And a lot of the major events that happen. So, for example, my event was actually a cardiac arrest, which was a result of the electrical function of the heart. A lot of heart attacks are more of the plumbing related functions, but there are absolutely signs that you can be aware of. Think of when it comes to the electrical, are you, you know, experiencing some irregular heartbeats that just don't seem right? Maybe heaviness in your legs, lightheadedness. And a lot of those plumbing type issues can be things like, maybe you're nauseous. Maybe you're more tired than usual. Maybe it's stomach pain. Those are some of the symptoms that you don't want to go you know, unnoticed. You want to have a conversation with your doctor. You can easily run some numbers, know your, you know, check your blood pressure, know your weight, blood sugars. Those are some of the easy things that you can do to really just keep an eye on, you know, obviously cholesterol is a big one too. Keep an eye on how that heart health is going for you, monitor it, and, you know, don't take it for granted. Make sure you're reporting some of those symptoms I mentioned.
Yeah, Linda, that's actually, I think this is, gosh, it's so hard because those symptoms, I know I've had them, my friends have them, because women's bodies are so different from men's bodies, and the hormones and the functions, you know, your cycle, whatever it may be, how women's bodies absorb and manifest stress. I mean, I've felt that, where like, man, why am I so tired? Why do I feel dizzy or lightheaded? My, you know, I have a lot of stomach pain. Why is that happening? And there are so many reasons why we might be feeling those things that, like you said, I think sometimes we just kind of wait it out. Because I feel like if I reported every time I felt bad, I would be living in a doctor's office.
No, you're right. I mean, but keeping track of it, and if there seems to be some repetition, some things happening more frequently, you need to report those things and be your own advocate. You really need to prioritize. When you know something's wrong with your body, you got to trust your gut.
Yeah.
So with your event, when it happened, what were you experiencing, and how did you know, and what did you do?
I mean, the truth is I had been diagnosed with a heart condition years prior, and it didn't affect my day-to-day life. My cardiac arrest that I suffered, I was actually driving down a very busy street with my daughter in the car on a Saturday afternoon. This goes back 10 years ago, so I just celebrated my 10th rebirthday, I call it. I suffered a sudden cardiac arrest. Now, the details of that day are still foggy, but this is what I do know. I left my six-month-old son at home. So here I am, a mom to a six-month-old, a two-year-old. I'm running errands, I'm grocery shopping, I'm picking up, you know, all kinds of items along the way. I don't know if I even gave it any thought if there were any warning signs that day, because truthfully, I was running around and focusing on everything else. And bam, I literally died while driving my car.
Oh. Wait, so what happened? What did you crash? Were you able to stop your car first?
No, I survived because of complete strangers that day stepping in, and a man actually was behind me and noticed my car was going really slow, pulled up next to me, didn't see me as the driver. I was slumped over, so immediately knew something was wrong. He pulled his car off to the side of the road and ran my car down, got it to a stop, and then over four lanes of traffic, another couple who happened to be pumping gas arrived to the scene, and that gentleman, a retired veterinarian, got me out of the car and performed CPR until the paramedics showed up. A sheriff happened to be nearby with an AED machine that needed to fire multiple times. The veterinarian, the man that was performing CPR, said my lips were blue, I had no pulse, and he was praying for my family that day.
Wow.
And so you remember none of that?
None of it.
You don't, and so like you just remember the last thing was you were driving and then that was it?
I remember bits and pieces of that day. In fact, just yesterday I was driving that same route to the same grocery store. And, you know, I often wonder if some of those memories will come back. But no, the actual feeling of right before it happened, I don't remember. So, I remember waking up in the hospital. It was about 4 days later. I was in a cooling method to help preserve brain function and to give my body rest. That was just the beginning of what has been a journey for the past 10 years of my heart disease and its progression.
So then what do you have to do to stay on top of it?
I mean, right now I am doing the things they say to do. I am, you know, really being aware of what foods I'm putting into my body. I'm working on my wellness through some strength training with some coaching, walking. I'm actually, for the first time in the past 10 years, at a stable place medically where I can be focusing on not just surviving, but actually trying to thrive again, which is something I hadn't been able to do over this journey because of a lot of other complications related to my heart disease.
If someone's listening now and maybe has felt some of these symptoms, has been worried about it, what are some risk factors that might make a woman higher risk for heart disease?
I mean, you've got to look at the genetics. My actual condition is a genetic condition. It stems from my father's side of the family. Both of my children are actually genetically positive for the same condition. So we're watching their progression very carefully. So now I'm not just a patient, I'm a mom of potential heart disease. But you really have to look at your family history and kind of wonder, well, that grandparent passed away suddenly from a heart condition. You may need to look into that a little bit further and definitely know your numbers.
And I think for a lot of people, they just don't have there's a fear or discomfort or whatever it is with just going to a doctor, especially if they're not feeling anything in the moment. What would you say to people like that?
You got to trust your gut. You know your body better than anyone, and you really need to, make notes to yourself. I remember days when I would have to write the date and time of something I felt and reflect back because, again, we get so busy in our day-to-day lives, it's easy to forget. But make notes, track your symptoms, and report them. And again, you have to sometimes be the one to push and say, no, I'd really like some blood work done. I'd really like to come in the office and be seen.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, like you said, you need to be your own advocate. You need to trust your gut. But maybe if for other reasons you don't want to go to the doctor, you think, oh, I'll be fine. I had a close family member who what convinced them to go to the doctor was that they owed it to, I owe it to my wife and kids to get this checked out because I may not be concerned for me, but, for your family, for your friends, they want you to be healthy too. So you need to advocate for yourself, but also if you are feeling reluctant, you would want your kid to get checked out. You'd want your spouse to get checked out. So you should too.
Right. What would you tell your best friend? What would you tell your sister? And talk it over with those you trust and take the encouragement. Hopefully those people in your lives would support you to do what's right, and better safe than sorry. Absolutely. There's no reason I should have survived that day. It was by the quick actions of complete strangers. And now I'm thriving due to technology and advancements in products that are literally beating my heart for me every minute of every day.
There is a website, part of the American Heart Association. It's called goredforwomen.org. I believe you can go there and find all kinds of information. There are resources there too. So if people are interested in doing that, it is goredforwomen.org. Linda Marino, we really appreciate your time telling us your story and trying to raise awareness for something that may be, on the back burner for a lot of people. So thank you for doing this.
It's worth the reminder every day so we can be our best.
That is Linda Marino with us here on KMOX. And one more time, the website is goredforwomen.org. And again, all kinds of resources, informational places for you to volunteer. If you want to donate, you could do that as well. It's Amy Marks-Kors and Chris Ranji. The Gas House Gang is happening at 12 o'clock. And we have one more 4-pack of tickets to give away right now, Amy. And we need caller number 6 to the contest line, 955-1120. And this is for The premiere, October 2nd, at Ronnie's Cinema, Soul on Fire. It's the John O'Leary story, a movie with William H. Macy. He's in it. Yeah, he plays Jack Buck.
That's fun. Yeah, that's fun.
John O'Leary, a really cool story of a kid who had an accident with fire when he was a child and severely burned, and he has overcome a lot and been really successful. A story about John O'Leary. It is called Soul on Fire. 4-pack of tickets for that movie at Ronnie's Cinema, October 2nd. Best of luck, 955-1120. And don't worry if you don't win today. You'll have more opportunities for the rest of the week on The Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Well, Matt has a lot of problems with you people.
Now you're going to hear about it.
Now you're going to hear about it.
Who cares? Hey, but we need to tell the people about Lana from Collinsville who won the tickets.
Congratulations,
Lana. For the John O'Leary movie, Soul on Fire.
Keep listening for your chance to win throughout the week. Matthew.
What's your problem?
Would you like to air your gripe?
I think it's a slow news day today because I heard one of the top stories in the newsroom today was that a roundabout is coming to Farmington.
Oh no, we need to have a protest.
Yeah.
Dude, what if we made that our mission?
Wait, Farmington, Missouri?
Yes.
There's a roundabout coming.
Yeah.
And the locals are pissed?
I don't know if they're pissed. But it's just happening is all.
You will not bring a roundabout to this town over my dead body.
This newfangled technology. But so I was talking to Stuart in the newsroom and Beth in the newsroom about the roundabout and how, you know, they're created to, you know, increase the flow of traffic. It's better than a four-way stoplight, right?
Yeah.
So I had started thinking about how I use roundabouts and how I use them the proper way and how
Matt does everything the proper
way.
He
does. That's right. Really does.
And nobody else does. When you are in a roundabout and you are exiting the roundabout, you need to use your blinker to exit the roundabout because there are other people waiting to enter the roundabout and they can enter sooner if they know you are leaving. And nobody uses their blinker in a roundabout.
But you never trust a blinker.
Right.
Because some people leave it on. And also, correct, there are so many turns into roundabout that to have the timing that your blinker is past your last turn but before your next turn, right. I mean, that's like precision military warfare.
If you're waiting to enter the roundabout, you need to just be waiting to see if that car turns before he gets to you. That you can't. Yeah. You just cannot
the speed,
trust.
You have to gauge this. Never trust a blinker.
Do not trust the blinker.
You people have trust issues. I trust my fellow man.
No, well, for you real. You do? Should never trust a blinker. I learned that when I was a kid, like when I was learning how to drive. Never trust a blinker.
There are laws for this. I'm sure.
And the older you get, never trust a toot. That's what they say. So that's what they say. I don't know. That's what I heard. That's what
I've
heard.
We're looking into it.
I love roundabouts. I think they're great. They're a lot of fun. It's like being on a ride, an amusement park ride.
Now, Wildwood installed like 3 roundabouts in a row. They got rid of all the intersections at Manchester and Highway 109. And so those are a lot of roundabouts. It's a lot. It's a little,
but
when you go through 3 in a row, you get kind of tired.
The traffic studies say that with the roundabouts, you get more traffic through than you do with a regular 4-way stop.
No, it's true. I mean, Mythbusters, that's who I trust, and they proved it. But here's the thing. Have you seen those giant roundabouts in Paris?
Yeah,
the
they're
famous
huge.
One. Oh,
there's multiple lanes in there,
I don't know.
Too.
There's like 9 lanes.
There's like an obelisk or something in the middle of it. Yeah.
Oh, an obelisk. Fancy.
Oh, really?
That's, maybe Farmington should put an obelisk in the middle of their
roundabout.
Yeah,
that's what they need in Farmington.
Have you been to Farmington recently? I went this summer. It is beautiful.
No, but it's beautiful. No, but I did go to Arnold.
How was it?
Oh, a couple days ago. I went to Arnold. Yeah, it was
fine. You did?
Yeah. My dead car was there, and I had to go say goodbye to her. My dead car was there. I had to go pick up all of my belongings out of it.
Hey, tomorrow we're going to talk about roundabouts a whole lot more, so be sure to stay tuned.
And amusement parks, because I mentioned amusement parks, that a roundabout sometimes feels like you're on a roller coaster, like a fun one. There's a possibility we might lose ours. Our amusement park.
Six Flags?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
we need to get into this tomorrow. Like, I don't know how real the possibility is, but it doesn't sound like it's non-zero.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to lose Six Flags.
No, I don't want to lose Six Flags.
We'll discuss that tomorrow. Amy Marks, Kors, Chris Ranji, thank you for listening. Get your podcasts, you know, wherever you get those normally. That's where we're going to be there, too. And then we'll be back tomorrow at 9 o'clock.